This is All In. I'm Jill Sheridan. 10 years ago today, Indiana Democrats had a walkout to delay action on right-to-work laws. And today we're talking about right-to-work and how it's changed things in Indiana. If you have questions or comments on the show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail, call us at 866-476-3881. Just give us your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that's 866-476-3881. You can also send us a high-quality voice message with our smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. And we're joined today by three guests. Brian Bosma is a former speaker of the Indiana House of Representatives. We have Brett Voorhees today, president of the Indiana State American Federation of Labor and the Congress of Industrial Organizations, which we will now refer to as AFL-CIO, and Joe Varga, associate professor of the labor studies at the IU School of Social Work. Thank you all so much for joining today. It's really nice to have such a great guest list on this really important topic. Joe, we sort of like to start with you, and maybe you can just give us a little bit of information. I remember back when this happened, we were calling it so-called right to work. Can you explain what is right to work?
Right to work is actually the phrase right to work is a brilliant piece of marketing by people who support these laws, because there's a lot of misconceptions about it, including among labor union members who I talked to back in 2010 and 11, who thought that the term had something to do with guaranteeing a right to employment, which it does not. It also does not outlaw labor unions. What right to work laws do, and they really start in 1947 with the passage of the Taft-Hartley Act, which was an amendment of the National Labor Relations Act of 1935. What right-to-work laws do is they allow states to pass laws that allow workers to opt out of paying their representation fees. Now, a representation fee is a fee that is akin to union dues. It's a percentage of the union dues that workers pay when they're part of a workforce that has voted to unionize. And in non-right-to-work states, those workers don't have to join the union, but they have to pay that representation fee because the union is representing them to the company in the form of the labor union contract. So in right-to-work states, those workers who do not, first of all, don't want to be in the union, but second of all, don't want to contribute to the maintenance of the union, can opt out of paying representation fees, which causes some people who are opponents of right-to-work laws to call those workers free riders, because they're still getting the representation of the labor union, but they're not paying the representation fee that goes with the maintenance of the contract. So that, they start, actually the term right-to-work, if you don't mind me going on a little bit, term right-to-work really initially was used back in the 1920s and into the 1930s, when people supported workers crossing picket lines, saying you have the right to work in that place, even though those other workers were on strike. And this comes from a period before the National Labor Relations Act in the mid-1930s, when employers were under no legal obligation to recognize a labor union or a picket line. And so what workers usually had to do on a picket line was literally physically prevent other workers from going in and working those jobs that they had walked out of. So proponents of or anti-union forces would say, hey, worker, you have the right to work. You have the right to cross that picket line. And then it started being used for workers who maybe didn't want to be part of a democratically voted labor union. So that's where the phrase comes from, and that's where it first started to be used.
So take us back 10 years, you know, how did this debate really surface around right to work in Indiana?
Well, I think it's interesting because Indiana is the 23rd state to pass a right to work law, but was also the 17th state to pass a right to work law. They had passed one previously in 1957, and it got repealed in 1965. And so in 2010, the Republicans achieved a majority in the Assembly and in the Senate, mainly for those of us who study these things and, you know, political scientists, really looking at that 2010 election with the rise of the Tea Party as kind of a reaction against the Obama election and the Affordable Care Act. And the Republicans achieve a solid majority in both houses of the Indiana legislature. And they had been wanting, and I'm sure Speaker Bosma will talk about this, they had been wanting to pass this law for years. And so they achieve this majority. And that is when the Democrats walk out. And we could talk about, you know, why they walked out. But that's basically what happened.
Yeah, we'll be getting into that. That was my actually first year working here at WFYI. I remember covering it. Brandon Smith, his first year as well. So we were so excited that it was so exciting at the State House.
And I mean, no surprise that the Democrats walked out, because labor is one of their main constituents and one of their main financial supporters. So there were those other issues that were tied into this new Republican majority, like the school voucher issue. And again, Speaker Bosma can talk more about this. But labor was a strong and is a strong supporter of the Democratic Party, not just in Indiana, but nationwide. And that's something that also develops historically with the passage of the New Deal legislation in the 1930s. But it was no surprise that they walked out, because this was a very important issue for their constituents in organized labor, who were their main financial backers.
So we will bring in former Speaker of the Indiana House of Representatives, Brian Bosma. Thank you so much for joining today, former Speaker Bosma. So you were at the head of this, you know, back 10 years ago. Was some right to work something that Republicans, you know, it was a priority and was timing just right then?
Well, it had been a priority for our team, but we had a published agenda before every election, actually before every legislative session. And in 2010 and 2011, and then again in 2012, right to work was at the top of that, that economic agenda. And in 2011, when we took the majority with 60 members out of 100, we had a very aggressive agenda on a lot of fronts. Right to work, we had the commitment to the school's school choice scholarship program was introduced that year. Major charter school expansion was introduced that year. And a number of other job creation and school reform measures, which, as you indicated, a number of the constituents of our Democrat colleagues were not very happy with. So ultimately, they did something at start, which was not extremely unusual, and that was to break a quorum, which has happened for an evening or a day in the past, both by Republicans and Democrats. But it turned out being, as you noted in the intro, the longest legislative walkout, I think it's in national history, not just since the Civil War, according to the National Conference of State Legislators.
Yeah.
The longest one, 35 days.
It was really remarkable, and I remember just covering it and being like, wow, when will it end? Before the walkout, though, you're talking about this topic, and you're making sure that, you know, the priorities around this type of legislation were known. And why was it important to give individuals, workers, the option to opt out of union membership, you know, when you're discussing this?
Right. Well, there's the individual freedom and no compulsion to join an organization, first of all. But really, this was about job attraction. We had created what Mitch Daniels used to call the best economic sandbox in the Midwest through business tax reform, through regulatory reform, through some very creative incentives to bring new employers here to Indiana. But according to those who are charged with making that happen at the IEDC, the lack of a right to work statute in Indiana was just taking us off the list of quite a few, not all of them, of course, but quite a few employers that just were only going to consider right to work states. So if you should talk to Jim Schellinger, former Democrat candidate for governor, that is now the secretary of the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. I just spoke with him this last weekend on another matter, and he told me that right to work was the best thing that Indiana's ever done for the economy. It gave a clear message to employers, not just in Ohio and Illinois, but in Munich and in Paris and in Switzerland, that Indiana is open for business and we want to make it an employer-friendly place to work.
So at the time, you know, Indiana Republicans pushing for right to work laws, you mentioned, you know, that other states already had these laws in place. What did the rest of the country look on this issue at the time?
Well, there were only 22 states that had right to work statutes. And no one had touched that third rail of politics in a decade since Oklahoma had became the 22nd. Right to work state. And when we said in 2011, and ultimately happened in 2012, that we were going to be the 23rd, it did result in a very significant expansion of our state's economy. It's one of the reasons that so many employers have come here, major employers, and there actually was I just got on the web to see if I could find the IEDC sheet. They would actually post a sheet every month that listed all the employers that had cited right to work as one of the primary reasons that they were coming to Indiana. And last I saw was, you know, more than three figures. So it was a significant job attraction. And in addition, it was our prediction, and we didn't really have the strong statistics to back it up, but it was our prediction that it would not have the, you know, end of the union as we know it effect, as some said it would at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think, Brett, we had a little pre-discussion here, and I think Brett will agree with that, that there's actually been an expansion of membership in Indiana. It was about 10.2% back when we adopted right to work, and it's, you know, a few percentage points higher than that. So back to the walkout, the way that the Democrat caucus led by then former Speaker Pat Bauer decided to address this was just to absent themselves from the General Assembly to break a quorum. We only had 60 members, so mm-hmm. we couldn't conduct business other than, the state constitution says, to call the absentees and, if appropriate, to enact penalties, fines, which we ultimately did twice.
Yeah, I remember. And we will talk all about the walkout, which is a 10-year anniversary that we're chatting about today, Right to Work Walkout on All In. If you have questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Jill Sheridan. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Jill Sheridan, and we're talking today about right to work in Indiana and the walkout Indiana Democrats organized 10 years ago. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. Search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store and send us your question or comment there. And we're back now with our guests this hour. I wasn't even able to reach Brett Voorhees, president of the Indiana State AFL-CIO. Brett, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being here today. Can you tell us, you know, historically, because this was all about the unions, you know, how strong of a presence have unions had in Indiana?
I mean, historically, I mean, we were probably at one time, if you go back in history, like with, you know, average numbers, like our country were 30-40% of workers were unions. And obviously there's been the big decline since then. But we have been staying pretty stagnant in Indiana for the last several years, anywhere between 10-14%. In our state, at least since I've been working in the labor movement here. So it hasn't really, can it be improved? Of course, absolutely. Do we want it? Absolutely, to improve. But the numbers have been staying steady. Mm-hmm. We have been fortunate. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, talking about 10 years ago, what was the biggest fear for unions and union members? I remember so many people coming to the state house and you know, just making their voices heard at the time. What was the biggest fear around right to work in Indiana?
Well, I mean, you really can't say one biggest fear other than it passing. And that's just because, I mean, it showed in all the other states nationwide, statistics and polling and that kind of things have showed that that right to work states are drive down wages. Even, I mean, they're less wages. Workers are earn less money. They have less health care benefits than your non right to work states. There's a number of things that the union benefits that it's been proven actually that right to work states do not have, including, you know, like I said, lower pay, less benefits, just a number of things, you know, workplace safety. A lot of those things are a lot lower in statistics than they are in actually non right to work states.
Mm-hmm. So, Joe, love to go back to you. You know, let's talk about what happened 10 years ago today in 2011 that prompted Indiana Democrats to organize the walkout. You know, what was the straw?
Well, I think when I'm listening to Brett talk about the workplace issues that are involved in the right to work thing, I think what we need to do is go back to the political issue. And I understand that Speaker Boswa has his view that it's about economics, but those who are opponents of right to work laws tend to think that it's more about politics. And I think we really see that in Indiana, and we see part of the reason why the Democrats walked out in 2011. One of the things that right-to-work laws do is they, particularly during a period of economic hardship, say 2010 to 2012, after the 2008 financial crash, workers in a place like the GM plant in Bedford, who are making really good money under their union contract, will probably be less likely to not pay their union dues or representation fees because they're very satisfied with their work and their working conditions and their pay. Workers in lower wage places like Kroger's, who are represented by the UFCW, the food and commercial workers, those are the people who might stop paying their representation fees, even though they're being represented by a union. And that in turn is going to lessen the coffers of labor unions, who then use that money to funnel it to Democratic candidates who then are supposed to pass pro-worker, pro-labor laws. I think, again, those who are proponents of right to work will probably say, you know, it's all about the economics. But the economics are a little cloudy. There are relocation specialist companies who will say that right to work is usually pretty down the list. It's usually around 7 or 8 when a company is making those decisions about where to locate. School systems and infrastructure, those things tend to be more important. So I think one of the things that we saw with the Democratic walkout was the Democratic Party recognizing that this assault on union dues and union representation fees was going to weaken a source of a very important source of campaign funding and campaign workers for their campaigns. And I think that was the part of the importance for them in taking such a strong stand on this issue. So I think that really needs to be brought into the conversation. The fact that it's not just about economics. And what do we see today? We see supermajorities of the Republican Party in both the House and Senate. And it looks very bleak for making any inroads on those supermajorities. In fact, there was this big effort in 12 and 14 by the Democrats to use the passage of the right to work law to try to chip away at those majorities. And in fact, both times they lost even more seats. And one could argue it's because they don't have the resources and the campaign power to assert themselves in the way that they did in 1964, when we had 40% union density in the state of Indiana. Unions were very strong and they were very serious political players at the time.
So, Brian, let me have you respond to that. You know, did you feel that at the moment back, 10 years ago, that really politics was a big part of this?
Well, there's little doubt that the walkout was politically motivated for just the reasons that the professor said. I can tell you from as the primary advocate in 2011 and 2012, my goals were not political. They were economic. And as I indicated, the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, which is a bipartisan board of directors for economic growth in our state, Just pulled up their 2011 slideshow that they shared with us, and their number one priority was to make Indiana a right-to-work state, and that it would have results and would grow our economy. And I, not because unions don't have contribution power that they used to, the parties spend about the same on legislative House and Senate seats, Republican and Democrat, from whatever sources they come from. I think that their super majorities are here today because the vast majority of Hoosiers have seen the results of 20 years of hard work to grow our economy and to cap property taxes, to have the number one economic engine in the Midwest right here in Indiana, to have the best tax environment in the Midwest and in the top five in the nation. So I think it's a result of the actions of the General Assembly, not because, you know, one party or the other gained political advantage by taking campaign funds away.
Mm-hmm. Joe, back to you really quick. I mean, talking about the actual walkout, you know, one of the longest in the history of the United States, you know, over a month that Democrats...
Just to be real clear, it's the longest in the United States. The National Conference of State Legislators confirmed that.
It's wild. across the state line, I remember in Illinois, you know, the pictures of being at the Marriott and driving there. How did Democrats manage to organize, you know, a walkout that long?
Well, I think we need to put it into context as well. There was a larger context going on at the time. Wisconsin at the time was having a major uprising, as it was called by labor union backers, against a public right to work law that was backed by Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin. And they were having the daily demonstrations at the State House with thousands of people that were really kind of, you know, nobody had seen this in quite a while. And then there was Ohio, which, you know, passed a right to work law that then got pushed back and repealed almost immediately by a great effort by organized labor in the state of Ohio. So there was this whole kind of Midwestern milieu that was kind of, you know, looking at the 2010 elections as, you know, trouble for Democratic politics because of the Republican majorities that, you know, seized majorities in these state legislatures. But then there was this pushback against the anti-union, anti-labor laws that were going on again in Wisconsin and in Ohio and in Michigan and in Missouri at the time as well. So I think the Indiana situation has to be seen within that context of a kind of labor uprising against the at the state level against the new Republican majorities that were pushing what are seen as anti-union laws.
Mm-hmm. Brian, take us back then. I remember, you know, you met with Pat Bauer at the time and we kept thinking that, you know, the walkout was going to be over. You know, what happened during that month and the following after the walkout was over?
Yeah, well, it didn't take me too long to figure out that the only return plan for, once I made it very clear that I wasn't taking everything off of the table, we ultimately did in 2011 take one item off the table, and that was right to work, and pushed it out to 2012. But the other, there was a list of 21 demands, and the other 20, when I made it clear that the calendar would be exactly the same the day they returned as it was the day they left, and then stuck with that, and then added the fines on top of it for their absence. Their only really return plan was for me to blow, I decided. And our kids used to have a bet at Christmas that, you know, when was Dad going to blow, putting up lights on the Christmas tree? And I would at some point until I figured out that that was their plan. And then I never blew again. So I just said, in response to every demand, the calendar will be exactly the same the day you return as it was the day you left, with the exception of we will hold right to work. That's it.
What did they end up having to pay fines?
Yeah, they did. I wrote the two fine motions myself. I removed the language that historically had been in there about suspending the fines. And every absent member paid something along the order of $3,500. which we withheld from their pay. I actually got sued over that. So got two lawsuits out of the whole thing.
Well, Brett, we'll turn to you. So Right to Work, passes the following year. Do you think the Indiana Democrat, walkout and the efforts then of 10 years ago was worth it?
The camaraderie and everything, absolutely it was worth it. I mean, it showed that that they were, willing to stick with us. Like you said, we provide a lot of resources to the Democrat Party financially and strategically and everything else. So, we didn't know if it's something that we could actually defeat or not until we tried. And the only option obviously was to walk out. And it didn't work the way that it was planned. The speaker and I can shouldn't say joke about it today, mm-hmm. but we all kind of predicted what would happen in the future. So, we like I said before too, we've stayed stagnant. I mean, it built our unions a lot stronger. It brought them together. The rallies that we had, the mail that we had sent, the places we attended to educate our members and things. It definitely built more awareness of the union and what we do to today. So it was definitely an education experience for our membership in the state, which was a huge positive for us. And that's probably one of the reasons why we grew, the following year, not by a ton of members, but enough to come up on the numbers on the Bureau, the BMI numbers. So anyway.
Yeah. No, I remember.
If I can add one.
Please go ahead.
One right. Thought on that. I think the result of the 2011 walkout was that the 2012 election was the first supermajority election that the Republicans had. And I think much of it was in reaction, negative feeling about those who had, from as we depicted it politically, had, walked out on their job for 35 days. And we used it to the fullest extent on the campaigns in 2012. And that was when we came back with the first supermajority. And I really attribute it to the walkout.
Yeah. What were you hearing from constituents? I mean, what was the general, public reply at the time? What were people saying in Indiana about this?
People were upset. I mean, there were letters to the editor. I'm a lifetime Democrat. These guys got to get back to work. I can't walk off of my job for 35 days. And they were all getting paid at the time, too. So that was tough on them, I know. And then we haven't mentioned yet, we had up to 14,000 protesters at the State House. That was intimidating for some. I mean, I waited right out in the crowd and started talking to people, which drove the state police nuts. But it was tough. And that was not covered as much as Joe mentioned, because Wisconsin had 30,000 people in their state capital during that same period of time.
Right.
So Indiana's 14,000, seemed like small potatoes, I guess, to the national media.
But Brett, we, had so many people at the state house, so many guys, like you said, the people with the camaraderie and really, taking this issue into their own hands. I mean, what did you hear from people at the time?
There was a lot of our people were angry, coming after their job, coming after their dignity, wages, benefits, those kind of things, which have been proven, to lower those in other right to work states. I think the biggest thing was once we got our membership educated, which we started educating the membership in 2011, 2010, 2011, as best as we could. But there was a lot of anger. There's still a lot of anger today that it's something that had passed. Even though it hasn't affected us a whole lot, it's still a piece of legislation that's not really, in our opinion, worthy of even passing, just because it does more negative than positive in our states. And our members know that now because of the education. And the education continues on as well. And we'll keep fighting it. We'll keep going to other states. Like, I spent some time in Missouri fighting right to work there with them, and we won that battle in Missouri. And that was decided by the public, which was pretty amazing victory there. So, you know, like I said, it's a lot of education has come out of it.
Mm-hmm. If I could jump in on the history, is that okay?
Yeah, quickly. We were about to break here, but yep.
Yeah, again, going back to 57, I think Brian might be interested to know that there was a group of labor union members that literally chased Governor Handley across the State House lawn as he was holding the law in his hand, and he never did sign it. So there was demonstrations at the time, too, in a much stronger labor union environment. Handley never signs the law. He allows it to become law without his signature. And I think that is one of the real differences between 57 and 64 and now, and even those demonstrations at the State House, is that when we had 40% union density in the state of Indiana, there would have been a lot more pushback against the passage of the Right to Work law.
Well, we will be right back talking about Right to Work today. Give us your comments or questions on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. I'm Jill Sheridan. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Jill Sheridan. And back now to our discussion on Right to Work in Indiana. As always, we'd love to hear your comments or questions. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name, where you're calling from, 866-476-3881. And we're joined again this hour by Brian Bosma, former Speaker of the House, Indiana House of Representatives, Brett Voorhees, President of Indiana State AFL-CIO, and Joe Varga, Associate Professor of Labor Studies at the IU School of Social Work. So it is 10 years today since the walkout. And you know, we're talking about, of course, Right to Work. Joe, we'll go back to you. You know, in 2011, who were the specific people that were for or against Right to Work in Indiana?
Well, I think it's interesting, and I actually want to push this back to Speaker Bosma a little bit, if he can respond later, about who was pushing Right to Work on his end, because there's a great study by two University of Pennsylvania political scientists who basically concluded, looking at legislation over a 30-year period and saying that constituents as individual voters and citizens have very little effect on what legislation gets passed. Because what I'm going to say is I cannot see an average Indianan sitting around in 2010 going, you know what's wrong with my life today? It's those darn unions and there's no right to work law in the state of Indiana. Most of the push for this comes from organized interest groups. And, you know, the Association of Manufacturers and the Chamber of Commerce would be the ones who would be pushing for a right to work law. One could say because they want to improve economic conditions. The other could say that they know that without labor unions or with weaker labor unions, they get to keep more of their profits and they don't have to spread them to their workers as much. And so obviously, who's going to be in favor or opposed to right to work laws are going to be union workers, their families, their members, the officers and leaders of labor unions. One of the interesting things, though, that I want to point out here, and again, it's not a criticism of Brett and the AFL-CIO, but during the demonstrations at the State House and during the debate about right to work, several of us were using this, you know, we wanted to write academic articles on it. And so we were doing research with the crowds at the Indiana State House. And of course, the union workers were opposed to right to work. But a lot of the people that I talked to were people who were going to work in the city of Indianapolis. And a lot of them were service workers who worked at fast food places or in the hotels. And a lot of them did not see their interests as tied to the union workers who were protesting outside of the State House. And I think that is a historical trend that unions have been trying to reverse in the last 10 or 15 years, but there was a historical trend only for labor unions only to see to the benefit of their membership and not look at the larger issues of low-wage workers who are not members of their unions. And again, that has changed. You know, you've got things like the Fight for 15, which is being led by labor unions, which is about service workers and low-paid hourly workers. But there were a lot of people that I talked to, and I don't have the scientific numbers on it, but there were a lot of people who I talked to who were on their way to work and they were on their way to low wage, hourly wage jobs who really said, I don't care. I have no interest in this because unions don't do anything for me. And part of that is part of a long, long assault on labor unions and the fall in union density from 35% in the 1960s to the 10% or lower where it's at today. Hmm. So, yeah. There are the obvious sides in this, the Chamber of Commerce versus the labor unions. But the interesting part is, I think, those people who did not have that direct stake.
Interesting. Brett, do you think that there's been, you know, that labor union sort of disconnect then? And is that something that now we are looking towards more?
Yeah, I want to be clear that the unions have gotten much better at this, and it's a big push for community-based bargaining and things like that. So, sorry, didn't mean to.
No, absolutely. And Joe he's 100% on it. And that's something in the service sector unions that we represent now, you know, we've been working to make them not only make them stronger, but those unions like Unite Here and others have been successful in organizing and educating the non-union workforce in those areas. So we definitely have learned that those are, you know, some of the workers that can benefit from, you know, from the unions. So and that's something that, you know, we still continue to work on, whether it be, you know, out at the airport or hotels or whatever the case may be. The membership within the service sector has grown since, you know, the Right to Work. Now, going into it, is there things that we could have done different in Right to Work? Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't in charge, obviously, back then. I didn't go to work for the AFL-CIO till I got elected in 2013. So it was after the fact. You know, you look back and you always want to say, what if we did this or what if we did that? But I think that and we all still do that. But the biggest thing that I, you know, can't stress enough is the education part of it that we've done. And I can't stress enough that we continue to do so. Eventually, Right to Work will be gone. If not gone just in Indiana, I think that it probably sooner rather than later that might be repealed nationwide as well with a Biden administration. So we'll see how it goes.
Brian, I did want to give you a chance to respond. You know, back in 2011, were you hearing from the typical organizations that you might imagine? And was that an influence to you?
Well, yes, the average, I agree 100% with what Joe said, that the average person walking down the street, that we don't call them Indianans, though, Joe, they're Hoosiers.
Hoosiers, I'm sorry, Hoosiers.
Did not have a dog in this fight.
Yeah.
They didn't understand it. That was one of the frustrations about the Democrats leaving the state for 35 days was what, you know, why? And why is this a big deal? The folks that were really pushing it were some that Joe just mentioned, the Indiana Chamber of Commerce, the Indiana Manufacturers Association. This was big for them. The largest entity, or I'd say the most voracious advocate, was the Associated Builders and Contractors. These are the non-union builders, construction trades folks that are very organized, and they had long advocated this change in Indiana's labor law, and then there were a lot of other affiliated pro-business folks, like the National. I gotta go look over here, and I just stepped up to look at a little thing. Oh, National Federation of Independent Businesses, Small Business Association, the Home Builders Association. Believe it or not, the apartment association, which is a powerful voice in Indiana, and some of the other real estate development folks were strong advocates, vehement advocates for this change.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think was the immediate impact in 2012 when Right to Work does go into effect?
Well, according to the IEDC, they had 47 companies in 2012. After the enactment, that specifically cited Right to Work as one of the reasons that they were coming to Indiana. So I honestly believe that is the biggest impact. Not that it changed things all that much for the unions or others, but that it made a statement, and those folks who just said, well, we're not going to go to a non-right to work state, changed their tune on that. Mm-hmm. And I think I understated the number. It's about, they had hundreds and hundreds of folks that, and I'm not saying they haven't solicited these comments from them, you know, with a questionnaire, you know, what are the reasons you're here? Here in Indiana, but it was a significant impact on that.
So, Brett, what has changed for unions in Indiana since Right to Work was enacted?
Well, I believe it made us stronger. It's in our awareness, the actual issue. I do want to say that, you know, going back to the creators of and the push for Right to Work wasn't just an Indiana thing overnight. This is something that simultaneously started happening in other states as well, and has been pushed by groups like ALEC, you know, the American Legislative Exchange, and the Koch brothers, and folks like those who are basically, you know, corporate. I'm not sure what to use the word to use. I mean, you know, their interest is corporations and not workers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of corporate greed out there, and that's a lot that had to do with it. And unfortunately, when it comes to the financial stuff as well, we were outbeat, you know, at least 2-1 on things that were spent to try and silence the unions. Today they're still trying to silence our unions. I mean, you know, Indiana, I think they've realized that Right to Work hasn't worked that much, so they want to come after us more. And now they're trying to come after our teachers and their union dues and how they pay dues and things. So I think you're going to, you know, we always keep seeing little things happening to try and discredit us, to try and basically eliminate the unions. But I think we still have enough educated members and workers that thrive and want to keep, you know, their unions and ones that want to organize. One thing I do want to say is that in the last few months, which unfortunately we have been going through the pandemic and it's been a trying crisis for all of us. But there is one thing out of it is that we have a lot of workplaces that are trying to organize now because of the way their companies have treated them during during COVID, during the pandemic, on, you know, like things like lack of PPE, you know, unemployment benefits being screwed up. Some people waiting 11, 12, 13 weeks to get their unemployment benefits. You know, some companies, and I'm not saying all of them, but you got your bad apples out there that lack on their PPE. They lack on their training for tracing and things like that. Indiana, unfortunately, you know, we lack on IOSA, really lacks on inspectors throughout the states. And that's one thing that has really hurt us hard. And I think workers are starting to realize that, and they're looking for a place to organize. They're looking for a voice, and they've been coming to us.
Yeah, Joe, maybe you could fill us in. You know, what are you seeing, different movements around legislation involving unions today in Indiana?
Yeah, there's a piece of legislation that's making its way through the legislature right now. That's about members of the Teachers Association forcing them to be proactive rather than have their union dues deducted from their paycheck. They have to actually confirm their union membership and then, I believe, pay those dues separately instead of an automatic deduction. And again, that is not, it's not outlawing the teachers union, but it's making it more difficult for them to collect dues, which is part of not only their operation and maintenance of contract and negotiation and protecting their members, but it has to do with the funds that are available for political action, to contribute to political action committees that then lobby and pass legislation that is pro-worker and, say, pro-teachers. So we've got those things going on. I also want to bring up some other stuff about Right to Work laws. Again, they don't outlaw unions, but if you look at the states with Right to Work laws, you'll see lower union densities in almost all of them. And then if you look at things like health indices and the number of people who have affordable health care, who have health insurance, if you look at basic overall quality of life indices, you'll often find a correlation. And correlation is not causation, but you'll often find correlation between states that are stringent and longtime Right to Work states. They're usually at the bottom of things like educational achievement. They're usually at the bottom in terms of infrastructure. They're usually at or near the bottom in terms of health indices. And I hate to say it, but they're usually places where you have strong Republican majorities, and that has changed over the last 50 years. But yes, there's usually strong Republican majorities, and there's usually those other kind of things along with income inequality. Now, there are people who think that income inequality is not a problem. But if you look at, there's a correlation between states with right-to-work laws and income inequality, because one thing we haven't talked about is wages. And weakening unions does actually have an effect on wages. It's a measurable effect. Union presence is called the union effect. It'll even raise wages in related industries that are non-union. So in other words, Toyota and Honda and Hyundai locate manufacturing here in Indiana. They pay close to union wages. Same thing with the limestone industry. The non-union limestone places pay at or better than union wages of unionized workplaces, because they're trying to keep the unions out, and they know that they have to pay those kind of commensurate wages. So wage levels are something that we really haven't talked about that is also affected by weaker labor unions and income inequality as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is a whole nother show. It's a really important issue, obviously. Yeah. Brian, I'd like to, get your response. Brett mentioned that there might be, some national legislation that would push back right to work laws. Do you think that would have a big impact in Indiana and that something like that may happen?
I certainly hope that's not the case. This is a state right. It's an internal item, and it's been litigated and determined that it is an internal economic issue. So for Washington, D.C. to step in and overturn what's now almost 28 states that have made this determination, I think would result in quite a little revolution for the states' rights folks. I do have to point out just a couple of things in what Joe said, but statistics are fine. Indiana has the top-rated infrastructure in the nation. Recently, our wages have steadily grown, dramatically, actually, in Indiana. And the job attraction that has occurred has been at significantly higher rates than Indiana's prior average rates. So I don't discount the statistics, maybe on a national basis, but all in all, right to work has been a positive thing for Indiana. It has resulted in economic growth, substantial employment increase, and really increasing Indiana's ability to be the best place to live, work, create a business, and raise a family.
Wow. It's remarkable that it has been 10 years out since Right to Work, and that's going to have to do it for us today. I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time to join. Brian Bosma, former Speaker of the Indiana House of Representatives. Thank you, Brian, for being here.
Thank you.
And we have Brett Voorhees, President of the Indiana State American Federation of Labor and the Congress of Industrial Organizations. Brett, thank you for joining.
Thank you. It's quite an honor to be on the panel with all of you.
Yeah, great panel. Rounding it out, Joe Varga, Associate Professor of Labor Studies at the IU School of Social Work. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, thanks, Brett, and particularly thanks, Brian, for engaging in the issues. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate the back and forth on a really important topic.
So thank you all again. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross, our engineer, and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Jill Sheridan. Thanks for listening. This is All In.